by an imperceptible degree. Thanks for the ride, guys. The hover started up the remaining 38 levels to the Fuller's place. Did you and Lita have fun? Avery asked, hating herself for prying but unable to stop.
We had a great time.
Actually, Atlas said, Lita sort of asked me out. Avery stared out the window. She knew she would lose control if she so much as looked at Atlas.
Is that weird?
He asked. She was being completely awkward, Avery realized. She needed to say something or she'd give herself away.
No, of course not. I mean, you should definitely go out with her, she managed.
Right. Atlas looked at her curiously. Funny how without Lita here, there was more space in the hover, yet now it felt small.
It's a great idea, Avery added.
It's a terrible idea. Please don't do it.
Okay, then.
Avery pinched her forearm to keep from tearing up. Her best friend and the boy she could never admit to loving. It was like the universe was playing a cruel joke on her. Silence fell over the hover. Avery tried to say something, anything, but she was at a loss. Every time Atlas had pinged her during the past year, she'd felt like she had too much to tell him, stories tumbling out breathlessly, disorganized, until Atlas invariably had to go. Now he was here in person, and Avery had nothing to say.
Hey,
Atlas turned to her as if getting an idea.
Are you still dating that Zay guy? Would you two want to come?
We were never dating, Avery said automatically. Zay hadn't spoken to her since the party at the aquarium, and besides, she'd seen him with Daniela last night. Whatever. She had no desire to double date with Atlas and Lita. Then again, maybe it wasn't a bad idea.
I could invite other people, though, she said quickly.
Who were you thinking?
Eris, of course. Risha and Ming and Jess. Ty, Maxton, Andrew, even Cord.
I'm not sure a big group thing is the best idea, Atlas protested, but Avery had nodded as she said all the names, already composing a flicker.
Lita won't care, trust me. Come on, Avery said. It'll be fun. We can all go out to dinner or a movie, whatever you want.
That does sound fun, Atlas admitted. You know Lita better than anyone, I guess. If you say it's fine, then you're right.
Avery ignored the guilt that reared its head at that comment. Really, she was just doing her best friend a favor, helping Lita see that she and Atlas didn't belong together before Lita got too invested and ended up hurt. She wished she could just talk to Lita about all of this. But Lita had shifted things between them, with all her secrets. About this summer, about liking Atlas. Avery wasn't sure how she would even begin the conversation.
Of course I'm right, she said lightly. Aren't I always?
Eris. Eris lay on her stomach, head tilted to one side, eyes firmly shut as a children's cartoon played across the back of her eyelids. This was the absolute laziest way to watch something, but right now she didn't particularly care. She wasn't even sure what time of day it was. She'd been lying there for hours, ever since her mom had knocked on her door that morning asking if she was okay. Eris had ignored her.
Eris?
It was her mom again. Eris burrowed deeper into the covers like an animal hiding in its nest, pumping up the volume on her ear antennas. She refused to see her mom right now. Much better to stay here, in bed, where last night seemed like nothing but a bad dream.
Please, Eris, I need to talk to you.
The pounding persisted. Something in her mom's tone made Eris lean over and, gritting her teeth, type into the touchscreen by her bed to unlock her bedroom door.
What do you want?
She snapped, still lying down. Eris was perversely pleased to see that Caroline looked terrible, her eyes lined with hollow circles.
How are you feeling?
Her mom started to sit on the curved edge of Eris's bed,
But Eris glared at her, and she retreated a step. How do you think I'm feeling? Eris knew she was being spiteful, but she couldn't bring herself to care. Caroline let the question go. There's something I need to talk to you about, she said, watching her daughter's reaction. She wrung her hands and took a careful breath. I know this is the last thing you want to deal with right now, but we can't stay here.
What?
It was enough to make Eris sit straight up, hugging one of her hand-stitched pillows to her chest. It's best that we leave. Your father should be able to come back here without having to face everything that's going on. Eris felt a rush of anger at the phrasing. It seemed cowardly to her somehow, as if Caroline were pretending she wasn't the one responsible. Your father needs some space right now, from us, her mom finished.
You mean from you? You said it yesterday. This isn't my fault.
Yes, but...
You go ahead,
Eris said, turning away. Her entire body felt strangely numb. She found that she didn't care what her mom did, one way or the other.
I'll wait here for Dad.
I don't know what your dad wants right now, Caroline said softly. I know he loves you, but it's up to him to figure out how all this is going to work. And just in case, we should be prepared for the worst.
The worst? Wasn't this already the worst?
It's you and me now, Eris, Caroline finished with the ghost of a smile. Eris wanted to argue, but lacked the heart for it. Where are we going? I found us a new apartment down tower.
Down tower? We aren't just going to the Nuage?
We can't afford the Nuage, Eris's mom said quietly. Suddenly, Eris understood. Her mom, the former model, and her much older dad. The revelation that Eris's mom had been with someone else.
You aren't taking anything from Dad, are you? You want to prove that you didn't marry him for the money.
Her mom nodded. It's the right thing to do. I owe your father that much, at least.
Don't worry, she said quickly. I'm trying to keep this as normal as possible for you. I have some money saved, and your tuition is covered through the year, so you won't have to change schools. I promise, it'll all be okay.
Eris felt a little sick at that statement. The idea that she might have to go to a downtower school wouldn't even have occurred to her. Her mom stood there a moment, as if she wanted to give Eris a hug, but Eris made no move toward her. After a moment, Caroline faltered and started for the door.
Just one suitcase for now, she said. We'll figure out the rest later.
As the door shut behind her mom, Eris collapsed onto her pillows and turned the cartoons back on, wishing she could escape into them indefinitely. An hour later, Eris sat in a hover across from her mom, bags and boxes stacked around them in the tiny space. Her skin crawled with dread as the numbers etched into the vertical corridor's titanium walls grew ever smaller. She kept expecting their hover to slow down and turn onto one of these floors, but it showed no signs of stopping.
"Mom," she said sharply, "just how low exactly are we going?"
"It was the best I could do given the short notice."
"That's not an answer," Eris persisted.
The numbers dipped below 300. Her mom sighed. I was poor once, too, you know. The dim light from the walls caught on Caroline's bracelet, the one piece of jewelry she'd brought with her, as far as Eris could tell. It looked fake, probably because it predated Eris's dad. There are millions of dollars worth of jewels in that safe, she thought in mounting frustration. Yet her mom had apparently picked today to abide by a strict moral code. Eris looked out the window, crossing and uncrossing her legs, feeling suddenly itchy in her denim jeans, as if her skin no longer fit. She got on her tablet and looked over her messages again. She didn't want to do it on her contacts in case her mom heard the verbal command and got upset with her for checking them constantly. Still nothing, like every other time she'd looked at them today. Finally, Eris felt the familiar weight of the hover decelerating, rotating just slightly as its electromagnetic propulsion slowed. She glanced up at the numbers marking the floor they had turned onto, and thought she might throw up. They were going to live on the 103rd floor? The streets down here were so narrow that the hover was barely able to turn the corners. They weren't even streets at all, really, certainly not the expansive streets of the upper floors that were designed to convince you that you might be outside, with real live trees and air that pumped through the floor in soft, breezy patterns. This was more of a hallway, with flickering fluorescent lights overhead and depressing institutional white walls. Several heads turned and watched as they skimmed past. Eris got the sense that no one down here took hovers all that often. They pulled to a stop in front of a dingy door marked 2704. Eris gulped. They were so far down, the floor here so big, that the numbers of each apartment didn't even begin with the floor number. God, the 103rd floor must be almost as big as the tower's base. Up on 985, there had only been 10 apartments total. Eris had known all her neighbors individually. Bags on each shoulder swinging wildly, Caroline opened the door to the hover and began fishing in her purse for some kind of ID chip. No bioscanners down here, that was for sure. Eris waited until the last possible instant, when the hover started beeping and informing her angrily that it would charge for the delay, before she peeled herself from the seat and walked slowly inside. It was worse than she'd imagined. The ceilings were low, the lighting was bad, and there was nothing even resembling a window. Feeling dizzy, Eris held her wrist up to her nose and inhaled her jasmine perfume, but it wasn't enough to cover the lingering odors of rot and trash that permeated this place. There were several boxes stacked in the middle of what was apparently her mom's bedroom, containing the few things Caroline had managed to send ahead. A tiny bathroom was tucked off the main bedroom, as well as a narrow kitchen. Not that Eris or her mom knew the first thing about cooking. Caroline began sorting through the boxes. "This is just temporary, Eris," she said without looking up. "I'm going to get a job. Figure something out." A job doing what? Eris thought, kicking open the only door left, the one that must lead to her bedroom. It was dusty and cramped, about half the size of Eris's closet in her old life. There would barely be room for anything else once they got a bed moved in there. Something crawled across the toe of her sandal. Eris looked down and saw a giant cockroach, its feet twitching madly. She jumped back with a wild shriek, and it skittered away. "Eris?" her mom called from the other room. "Are you okay?" "Of course not! None of this is okay!" Her mom started toward her, but Eris was on a roll, and there was no stopping her. "I hope it was worth it!" she screamed. "Cheating on Dad with some random guy? I really hope it was worth ruining our lives!" "It wasn't some random guy," Caroline began, but Eris cut her off, putting her hands dramatically over her ears. "Oh my God, I don't want to hear about it!" "Eris, how can I believe anything you say anymore?" She stumbled blindly out the door and slammed it behind her, not caring where she went as long as she got away. Just then, her ear antennas began to ring, and her contacts lit up with an incoming ping. "Avery." Eris declined it. Avery had no idea what was going on, of course. Eris hadn't told anyone. But whatever Avery wanted to talk about, Eris couldn't handle it right now. The problems of the upper floors felt a lifetime away. She slumped against the wall in the hallway, biting back a scream. "I know you!" Eris turned, furious at whoever dared talk to her. A Hispanic girl about her own age stood several doors down. She was wearing fake leather pants, a gold bandeau top, and jangly earrings. One hand was holding a plain black hallucilighter, which she held up now to take a long, slow drag, puckering her lips into an O as she exhaled the bright green smoke. "Pot shots, then."
"I don't think so," Eris said shortly. "You're a member at the club where I work. Altitude."
Eris glanced at the girl, her heart-shaped face framed by black bangs, her legs casually crossed, ending in bright blue cowboy boots. She didn't recognize her.
"You were sort of rude to me, in fact," the girl went on, dark eyes narrowed.
Eris said nothing. If this girl was looking for an apology, she wasn't going to get it.
"So,"
the girl's eyes traveled up and down Eris's outfit, her designer jeans and the pearl studs in her ears.
"What the hell are you doing down here?"
"It's a long story."
"Suit yourself,"
the girl shrugged. Eris eyed the girl's hallucilighter. No way that it was the good stuff she usually smoked, but suddenly she felt an overwhelming and desperate urge for a hit. Screw it. Her life was already in shambles. Why not smoke up with an altitude waitress who apparently hated her?
"I just found out that my dad's not my dad,"
Eris said bluntly and walked over. The girl held out the hallucilighter, revealing a small ink tat at the base of her wrist.
"What's that supposed to be?" Eris asked, distracted.
She didn't recognize the angular shape.
"It's part of a set."
"Where are the others?" The girl laughed, giving her crisp dark curls a shake. She smelled like smoke and cheap perfume, and underneath, something spicy, like the scent of amber candles.
"Like you'll ever see them."
Eris couldn't be bothered to rise to the bait. She took a long, deep drag of the lighter, exhaling the smoke in a perfect ring. The girl raised an eyebrow, impressed.
"Anyway," Eris went on, "my dad had all the money, so now it's just the two of us."
"Wow. Wasn't expecting that."
"Yeah, me neither, obviously."
They stood in a strange silence for a while, passing the hallucilighter back and forth. Eris kept waiting for someone to come tell them off. Up on 985, she'd always had to smoke right by the vents to keep the regulators from showing up. But the girl seemed surprisingly nonchalant. Maybe no one cared what went on down here. Eventually, the lighter was almost out of weed. The girl dropped it carelessly to the ground and crunched it to a fine black powder under her feet, then smeared the powder around with her heel. It was one of those cheap disposable lighters, Eris realized.
"See you around. My name is Marielle, by the way."
"Eris."
"Well, Eris,"
Marielle repeated, with a hint of laughter, still seeming amused at finding Eris down here.
"Welcome to Bainberry Lane."
"Is that really what this street is called?" Eris couldn't believe anyone would give this dismal place such a happy-sounding name. It was delusional.
"Look up Bainberries,"
Marielle called out, disappearing into her apartment. So Eris did. They were highly poisonous plants, often used in medieval suicides.
"Now it makes sense,"
Eris muttered, wiping at a sudden angry tear. She started to turn back toward 2704, but hesitated upon hearing voices in Mariel's apartment. A low, adult voice in particular. Probably Mariel's dad. For some reason, the sound of it sparked Eris into motion. She couldn't just wait around smoking any longer, wondering what her dad was thinking. She had to talk to him. She turned in the opposite direction and headed for the nearest express lift up tower. It was Sunday, so the plastisurge department of the Vensen Seyen Hospital on floor 890 wasn't all that crowded.
"Hey, Eris, he's in his office,"
Slate, the department's receptionist, offered as she walked up. Eris barely nodded, already hurrying onward. She passed the experimental center, where various DNA forms were being recombined in tiny petri dishes, and the nerve farm, where spinal cords were grown in enormous translucent tanks, heading toward her dad's office at the end of the hall. Everett Radson, M.D., Director of Cosmetic Procedures and Modifications, read the printed nameplate above the door. Eris took a breath and stepped inside. He was slumped at his desk, wearing a half-zip golf sweater and blue scrubs pants, one hand wrapped around a mostly empty handle of scotch. The unflattering hospital light caught the strands of gray in his hair, and there were new worry lines at the corners of his eyes and mouth. He looked, for the first time in her life, like an old man.
Eris. He sighed, his hand gripped tight around the scotch. There was something funny about the way he pronounced her name, like his mouth was having trouble forming the sounds. She opened her mouth, uncertain what she should say now that she was actually here.
"I kept waiting for you to ping me," she began, knowing it sounded accusatory.
"I'm sorry," her father said. "I just needed to get away for a little while."
Neither of them spoke. Eris glanced around the office, from the 3D screens in the corner to the closet with the real human skeleton, which she used to come look at sometimes in elementary school, fascinated, until Avery had told her it was morbid and weird. But Eris hadn't been afraid of the skeleton. She'd never feared much of anything, she realized, until now. Her eyes drifted back to her dad. He was holding something in his hand, staring at it in bewilderment, as if uncertain what it was. It was his gold wedding ring. All the words she'd planned on saying were wiped from her mind.
"What's going to happen with you and Mom?"
"I don't know."
Her dad sighed and placed the ring on his desk, then finally glanced up at Eris.
"You look so much like her," he added,
and his voice was laced with sadness.
Eris had never before hated how much she resembled her mom.
It was probably all her father saw now when he looked at her. She was the living proof of her mom's betrayal. Nothing connected her to him anymore, she realized with a jolt, except that they'd both spent the past 18 years being lied to by the same person.
"I'm sorry," Eris whispered.
"Me too."
He started to pick up the scotch, then stopped, as if remembering she was there.
"Dad? Or Everett?"
"I'm sorry, Eris, but I need some time,"
he interrupted. His voice was shaking.
"I'm just struggling here."
Eris bit her lip. She'd come to the hospital hoping her dad would fix everything the way he always did, and yet he seemed even more broken than she was.
"I miss you," she said helplessly.
"I miss the way things were," he said in answer,
and Eris's heart sank. Part of her wanted to shake him, scream at him. "Look at me," she wanted to say. "I'm hurting too. I don't want to lose you."
Tears welled in her specially surged amber eyes, but the old familiar pride held them back, stuck the words in her throat.
"I'm sorry, I just need time,"
Everett said again.
"Please."
Eris nodded, feeling as though she were falling a great distance. She didn't know what would happen to her parents. She didn't know when, or even if, her father would be ready to see her again. She started back out toward the crowded elevator. But even pressed into the crushing sea of people, Eris had never felt more acutely alone.
Rylan.
Here goes nothing, Rylan thought, and stepped up to Cord Anderton's door for the second time in 3 days. Hard to believe that after everything that happened, she was back again, and by her own design, no less. The previous morning, when her communal's hangover had finally dissipated and her anger cooled a bit, Rylan had opened her tablet to find herself 250 nanodollars richer. She wondered if the extra 50 was a standard Cord Anderton tip, or an attempt to make up for his late-night behavior. She wavered between paying rent and the bank. The bank, she decided, seeing how impossibly high that debt had grown. Besides, she could always fend off their landlord when it came down to it. He tended to cut Rylan and Krissa a little slack, because he'd known their mom. "Hey, Fenton," Rylan had written, sending him a quick message. "Just wanted to let you know that this month's rent will be coming to you a few weeks from now." They were behind on last month's, too, Rylan had remembered with a sudden twinge of discomfort. But it was too late. She'd already sent in the bank deposit. "I'm really sorry. It won't happen again," she went on, hoping he was in a good mood today. Then, swallowing her pride, she had called Cord. He'd answered on the fifth ring. She jumped in, trying to sound normal.
Hey, it's Rylan.
Myers, she added clumsily after a moment of silence.
Rylan, how unexpected to hear from you.
Cord had sounded amused. Rylan tried not to, but all she could picture was the bright red mark on his face after she'd slapped it.
About last night.
She was sitting at the kitchen table, tracing a crinkled advert for Later Gators cereal, the Instapaper so old and cheap that the cartoon alligators no longer danced. Only their eyes flicked creepily back and forth, their tails barely twitching. Rylan took a deep breath and tried again.
I want to apologize. I was tired, and I overreacted. I'm sorry.
Words are cheap, Cord answered.
If you really are sorry, why don't you show me?
Rylan slammed her hands on the table.
You seriously think after... Get your mind out of the gutter, Myers, Cord said, drawling out her name in that way of his. I was going to ask if you would clean again. I don't know if you've met my brother, Bryce, but he's here this week, and he's kind of a mess.
I could do that. Same rate? Rylan said carefully. It was what she'd been about to suggest. After seeing that cash in her account this morning, she'd realized she should squeeze as much money out of Cord as she could. Yet somehow it seemed like the upper hand had shifted back to him.
Sure. I'll have the uniform sent over. Wearing it is optional, of course.
Cord chuckled. Rylan had rolled her eyes and started to reply, but he'd already hung up. So now it was Monday morning, and here she stood, waiting for Cord Anderton to calm her in. She tugged self-consciously at the shapeless black dress and white apron the drone had delivered last night. She'd already called in sick to Booza, her boss at the monorail stop. She even had official proof, since she and Krissa had long ago rigged their Mediwan to log a false positive for nasopharyngitis. She wasn't sure how long she could hold down her real job without showing up, but she couldn't afford not to try. As the door clicked open, Rylan stepped inside and paused for a moment, speechless. On Saturday, these rooms had been overheated and crowded, full of people and noise and light. Now they felt vast and empty. Rylan's eyes traveled to the greenhouse with its cobblestone flooring and insect-like heat lamps, to the cavernous high-tech kitchen, to the two-story living room with its curving glass staircase.
Care to tell me why you're here?
Rylan jumped, whirling around, and almost collided with a dark-haired stranger wearing a navy suit and a smirk.
Where's Cord?
She said without thinking, and instantly regretted it.
Who knows?
The guy flashed a grin.
Maybe I can help you instead. I'm Cord's brother, Bryce.
Of course, Rylan thought. They looked alike, though Bryce was almost 10 years older.
Rylan Myers, sorry to bother you, she said quickly. I'll get to work.
Work? Cord asked me to come clean for you guys. She shifted her weight, feeling uncomfortable.
Ah,
Bryce said quietly, his eyes traveling up and down her body.
Well, I'm glad Cord's taste is improving. You're certainly better than the last one.
Rylan didn't say anything, just went to the closet of cleaning supplies and gathered the bucket of spray cleaners and disposable scrub balls. But when she went back out into the living room, Bryce was still there. He leaned back on the couch, his tie loosened and his arms crossed behind his head.
Please don't let me stop you, he said lazily. It won't bother me if you clean around me.
Rylan gritted her teeth and started up the stairs, ignoring him. Later that afternoon, she stood outside the door to Cord's bedroom, steeling herself to go in.
It's not that weird, she told herself. He's just a guy.
But even though she'd been in Hero's room plenty of times, walking into the bedroom of a stranger felt somehow weird. It was far too intimate. She started with the bed, changing the sheets and fluffing the pillows, then sprayed the windows and UV-cleaned the carpets. Finally, As she was running a duster over the top of Cord's heavy wooden dresser, she hesitated, overwhelmed by a powerful curiosity. Who was Cord Anderton, anyway? Impulsively, she opened the top drawer and glanced through its contents, an assortment of very masculine things. Some of them she didn't even recognize. But it had been so long since her dad left, all Ryland could really remember was living in a house full of women. She pushed aside cufflinks, a small bottle of cologne, a leather billfold embossed with W.E.A. Cord's father's initials, she guessed. Ryland was a little impressed to find it full of illegal old paper greenbacks, which still circulated wildly through the black markets, since, unlike nanodollars, they were untraceable. Maybe they were just heirlooms. But if Cord actually paid people in this, he was ballsier than she had realized. In the bottom drawer, she found something that gave her pause. An antique metal box filled entirely with custom-made bespoke drugs. Spokes, everyone called them. Ryland had never seen so many in one place. But she lifted up the lid of the box, and there they all were. Her own personal treasure trove of tiny black envelopes, each of them marked with the signature yellow prescription label and containing a single pill. Spokes were exorbitantly expensive, worth more than Ryland made in weeks at her monorail job, precisely because they were legal drugs, prescribed by a doctor after countless brain scans and psych evaluations. They were tailor-made for wealthy clients to relieve stress and calm anxieties. Ryland glanced at the date on the original prescription. Just as she'd guessed, right after his parents passed. She leaned back on her heels, thinking about how strange the world was, that both she and Cord had lost their parents. Yet while she was working for an hourly wage just to keep her family together, with barely any time to properly grieve her mom, Cord had been given custom-made drugs to help with his grief. It wasn't fair, Ryland thought bitterly, then felt a little ashamed of herself for the thought. Cord had lost his parents. She, of all people, shouldn't judge what he did to handle it. Shutting the door with a sigh, Ryland gave one last glance around the room before heading downstairs. She pushed open the front door, only to bump into Cord on the steps. Oh, hi, she said clumsily. She didn't know what to say to him. She'd never before had to face someone she'd recently slapped. Heading home? Cord was wearing workout clothes, as if he'd come straight from the gym. Or maybe he'd been running. There was dirt caked around his shoes, leaving prints on the white limestone step. It's 4 o'clock. Ryland crossed her arms over her chest, feeling suddenly self-conscious of the uniform, which was tight across the boobs. No, of course, I didn't mean... Thanks for the gummy buddies, by the way. My sister loves them. Ryland wasn't sure why she'd said that. She wasn't getting paid to stand here and make conversation. She moved down a step, so she was on the same level as Cord, and started to walk past him. Krissa, right? Cord asked, shocking Ryland into stillness. She couldn't believe Cord remembered Krissa's name. Yeah. She's 3 years younger, Ryland said quietly. Cord nodded. That's great that you two have each other. Ryland thought of Cord and Bryce. She wondered how close they were. Sorry, Cord went on after a moment. I didn't mean to keep you. You're obviously headed somewhere. To meet Krissa, actually, Ryland said, stumbling over her words a little. She'd been about to say, my boyfriend, and then some instinct had stopped her, though she didn't know why. Tell her there are more gummy buddies where those came from, if she promises not to torture them the way you did. Ryland couldn't help smiling at that. See you tomorrow, she started to say, but he'd shut the door quietly behind him. Whatever, Ryland told herself as she started down the F-lift. Cord Anderton was impossible to understand, and there was no use trying. When she reached Park and Central, the intersection at the exact center of the tower, Ryland stepped through the metal double door marked Lift Maintenance Only. She had to wait only a few minutes before Hirul appeared from the lifty's locker room in jeans and the thin black shirt he wore under his swing suit. His hair was still damp with sweat from the Ekremold helmet.
"Hey, babe. Didn't know you were coming by today."
Rylan leaned into the hug. He smelled comfortingly familiar, like metal and sweat.
"I wanted to see you."
"What's with the costume?"
Hirul laughed. "Oh, right." Rylan glanced down at the maid's uniform she'd half forgotten she was wearing. "I worked for Cord Anderton today. You know, my mom's old job, and..."
"Seriously?"
His tone sharpened, all his good humor gone. Hirul hated the high liars, with a fury that sometimes shocked even Rylan.
"Why the hell would you work for that asshole?"
"It pays more than the monorail stop, and I called in sick there. It's just temporary," she said impatiently.
"Oh, I get it. Well, as long as you didn't quit your real job."
Hirul put an arm around her waist.
"New gig. This calls for a celebration. Want to go to Habana's?"
It was their favorite divey Cuban place, with spicy street corn and deep-fried queso.
"Absolutely."
Rylan followed him out into the thoroughfare, where the lights had dimmed to evening setting. Just then, a message came through on her tablet. Fenton's response to her earlier message. "Rylan, I've tried so hard to be generous with you and your sister, but I can't keep making exceptions for you," it read. "You're 2 months behind on rent. If you don't pay by the end of the week, you're evicted." Rylan felt nauseated. She immediately tried to call, but he didn't pick up.
"Everything okay?"
Hirul was watching her. Rylan didn't answer. She felt like the world was spinning. This was her fault. Why had she paid the bank earlier instead of the rent? She'd been so sure of herself, of her ability to squeeze another month's grace period out of Fenton. She'd done it plenty of times before. But now everything was crashing down, and she didn't know how to fix it. "You'll get your money by Friday," she typed back, her hands shaking, though she had no idea on earth how she would manage it. Maybe she could borrow some from Hirul, except his family needed every penny, too. Or maybe Cord could give her an advance. Cord. Her mind flashed to what she'd found in his bottom drawer earlier that afternoon. There was her answer. "It'll be okay," she told Hirul, hating what she was considering. But more than that, Rylan hated that she didn't really have a choice. Avery's stomach twisted nervously as she and Atlas pulled up to the Coles apartment. Through sheer force of will, she'd managed to turn Atlas and Lita's date into a big augmented reality group game. She told herself it was fine, that she hadn't done anything all that bad, but deep down Avery knew she was being selfish. She glanced up at Lita's doorstep, suddenly remembering the first time she and Lita had gotten drunk. Well, tried to get drunk. They'd just been giddy and ridiculous, only slightly buzzed off the spritzers Cord had given them. But they had decided they shouldn't go inside until they were totally sober again, in case Lita's parents hurt them. They'd ended up spending half the night sitting together on the Coles' front step, telling stories and giggling at nothing in particular.
"Want to tell Lita we're here?"
Atlas asked. "Oh, sure. We are outside," Avery flickered, realizing as she scented how sparse their message thread had become. Normally, she and Lita were in constant communication, sending each other selfie snaps, complaints about school, messages from boys to analyze. But over the past couple of days, they'd barely messaged each other at all. "Thanks for picking me up," Lita said as the hover door slid open. She had on a navy silk top and white jeans, with red-soled espadrilles. Avery moved aside to make room for her, glancing down at her own outfit, all black Artek and her comfy turquoise sneaks.
"No worries," Atlas smiled. "Are you really wearing those to AR?"
Avery blurted out, looking at Lita's shoes.
You've seen me run in heels.
Lita gave a brusque laugh.
Right.
She felt a sudden urge to diffuse the tension, to pretend this had all been everyone's idea to begin with.
I'm so glad we decided to do this,
she gushed, lamely.
I haven't been to AR in forever.
Get ready, because we're going to kick your ass, Aves.
The light danced in Atlas's warm brown eyes. Avery, Lita interrupted, how was shopping with Eris? Did you get anything? Avery felt a stab of guilt. When Lita had flickered her yesterday morning, she'd said she was shopping with Eris, knowing it would put Lita off. But Eris hadn't answered any of her flickers, and Avery had stopped by her apartment only to find that no one was there.
Oh, I got some jeans,
Avery fumbled, naming the first thing she could think of.
At Denna.
Don't you have those in pretty much every color? Lita asked. Avery faltered, caught off guard.
Like that's ever stopped either of you, Atlas joked, oblivious.
They pulled up to the AR Arena, which sprawled over a corner of the 623rd floor, just as its massive walls shifted from army green camouflage to a depiction of a dark stone dungeon. Risha, Jess, and Ming all stood outside, dressed like Lita in cute jeans and impractical shoes. Avery refrained from rolling her eyes. She wished Eris were here. She could use a dose of her irreverent sarcasm right about now. Though, come to think of it, the last time they'd all done AR, Eris had shown up in a black leather catsuit just for fun.
The guys are inside,
Risha offered as they gathered in front of the doors, which now showed a dragon swooping over an icy mountain peak.
Probably arguing about whether to play cowboys or aliens,
Atlas said, holding open the doors. Avery fought the urge to stay back, walk with him, reach for his hand.
I heard that, Ty Roderick called out from the ticket counter.
A group of middle school boys, all clutching the special edition lightsaber accessory, stood in line behind him.
The cowboy arena is old news, Fuller. We're playing Alien Invasion. Who's on my team?
Ty typed into the 3D printer, which spit out electronic-coded game tickets for each of them, four black and four white. Each was shaped like a tiny, miniature alien head, unique to the game and impossible to counterfeit. Apparently there were people so obsessed with AR that they collected these tickets, even though they were useless once the game was over.
"Aren't we doing boys against girls?"
Avery said quickly. They'd played a lot of boys versus girls games here, back in the day. And the last thing she wanted right now was to imagine Lita and Atlas on the same team, together in the adrenaline-fueled darkness.
That's uneven, though, Maxton Feld pointed out. 5 versus 3.
Avery silently cursed Cord for not showing up.
Maybe we randomizer it?
She suggested, pulling up the dice-shaped icon on her tablet. Lita jumped in.
Atlas and I already said we'd be on a team.
Avery stayed quiet as the teams were sorted out. Her, Ty, Ming, and Jess against Maxton, Risha, Atlas, and Lita. She kept on saying nothing as they went to their respective team locker rooms to gear up. Ty was babbling about strategy, explaining his plan to swarm and surround, but Avery wasn't listening. She just nodded, gripped by a strange and sudden apathy. Finally, the four of them stood assembled in the staging area, haptic vests fastened around their torsos, their plastic radar pistols holstered to their belts. Avery pulled on the thin mesh gloves that would track her hand movements for the master computer. Her virtual reality headset gave a loud beep, clamoring for her attention. It wanted her to select her avatar, the image that all her competitors and teammates would see once they entered the arena itself. Everyone else was waving and pointing, adding hair and armor and facial features. But Avery just selected the base avatar, with no defining characteristics at all. People paid too much attention to her real-life appearance for her to bother customizing a virtual one. 3, 2... The countdown board lit up. Next to her, Ming was leaning back on her heels in anticipation. Ty turned and grinned at Avery.
"Ready, Fuller?"
he asked with a wink. Avery ignored it. She'd made out with Ty once at Jess's parents' holiday party, and he kept acting as though it would happen again. One. The doors opened to reveal a spaceship on red alert, emergency lights blinking the length of the abandoned hallways. If she took off her headset, Avery would see just an empty, industrial-looking space, filled with steam vents and shifting carbon foam walls. Somewhere, the other team was walking out of another exit pod into a different part of the spaceship arena. Avery pressed the button on her wristband to calm the others. "Ming and I will take the left," she whispered, pushing a silver door that led to a side hall. Ming, dressed as a pink fairy princess, there really were no avatar restrictions, though she looked ridiculous in the middle of a space game, nodded and followed. Something exploded to their left. Avery crouched next to a heavy pipe, then jumped up and launched into a sprint, no longer worrying about Ming. She fired her radar pistol into the opaque mist at the corners of the room. A ladder was suspended before her in midair, reminding Avery of nothing so much as her own ladder up to the hidden roof deck. Why not? She thought, jumping up and starting to climb. It felt good, moving like this through the dark anonymity of the arena, her blood pumping hot and fast through her veins. If she moved quickly enough, she could forget about Atlas and Leda, about everything except the game itself. At the end of the ladder, she swung herself onto the higher level and began shooting at two figures up ahead, illuminated with glowing arrows that marked them as members of the opposite team. They ducked behind a stack of boxes marked with radiation signs, one of them tripping forward over her feet. That had to be Leda and her stupid espadrilles. Avery moved slowly, creeping around from the opposite side so they wouldn't see her, and froze. Crouched next to Leda was Atlas. She knew from the tattoos on the inside of his wrist. It was his tell, the matching yin and yang tattoos that he'd never get in real life, but always put on his avatar in Arena games. Avery watched as Leda put her hand lightly on his shoulder. Atlas didn't pull away. Avery held her breath, willing herself to stop watching, but she couldn't look away. Leda's gesture seemed saturated with meaning, possessive somehow. It was the kind of touch you gave someone you'd already touched in other ways, or who you really wanted to. The kind of touch Avery could never, ever give Atlas. "Disengage," she whispered, pulling the red tab on her wristband. Immediately, Avery's weapons were rendered inactive, and she became invisible to everyone in the game, able to do nothing except walk back to the staging room until she reactivated. It was like she wasn't even there, like she'd suddenly erased herself. Which was exactly how she felt. Watt. "So much for easy money," Watt thought as he walked into the 623rd floor Arena. It had only been a few days, and already Leda Cole was proving a complete pain in the ass. When he'd taken this job, he hadn't realized just how difficult she would be. She was constantly flickering him for updates on Atlas, on his movements, his messages, what holo shows he was watching, and whether he thought they were funny. Watt had answered all the queries he could, but he still hadn't managed to hack the Fuller's home network, so he didn't know anything that happened within their walls unless Atlas flickered someone about it. Now he was dealing with her latest demand for help on this augmented reality group date. Watt had stupidly agreed to break into the Arena's system and manipulate the game to force Leda and Atlas together, but he'd said that before he and Nadia had actually looked at the system's architecture. Turned out the Arena handled such a high volume of data that even Nadia couldn't get through their heavy firewall. Watt had finally realized that the only way to do what Leda wanted, what he'd so foolishly promised, was to infiltrate the system from within. "How did we get ourselves involved in such a dumb hack, Nadia?" "As I seem to recall, I'm not the one who signed on for this job," she replied. He stepped up to the 3D ticket printer and studied the options, getting excited in spite of himself. There were fantasy games and an Aztec jungle adventure, and even something called Dragon Riders. Watt wondered how on earth they simulated that. Well, if he had to buy a ticket to get in,
He might as well play, right? If only Derek were here. He would lose it over this place. Just as he selected a wizarding game and started to print his ticket, Watt looked up at the staging area and caught his breath. Walking across the room was unquestionably the most beautiful girl he had ever seen. "Nadia, who is that?" he asked. Nadia pulled up the girl's feed, and Watt almost laughed aloud. She was Avery Fuller, the sister of the guy he was supposed to be spying on, and Lita's best friend. Watt stared, transfixed, as Avery reached up to pull out her ponytail, letting her blonde hair fall loose down her back and giving it an impatient toss. He thought he saw tears in her sky-blue eyes. "What do I say to her?" "Buy a pack of grapefruit M&Ms from the vending machine, take the seat next to her, and start eating them," Nadia prompted. "Really?" It was weird advice, even for Nadia, who often suggested the strangest and most oblique solutions to problems. "Have I ever led you wrong before?" That was true. Watt did as she said, buying the candy and walking over to settle on the bench next to Avery, deliberately ignoring her. He pulled the grapefruit M&Ms from his pocket and began popping them in his mouth one by one. He felt Avery's attention shift to him, heard her clear her throat, sensed the weight of her gaze on the M&Ms. He pretended he wasn't aware of it. Sure enough, after a moment, "I'm sorry," she murmured, tapping him on the shoulder. "I was just wondering, could I have one?" Watt blinked, a little stunned when she spoke to him, even though he'd been expecting it. She really was the most breathtakingly beautiful girl he'd ever seen. Finally, he recovered enough to say something. "Sorry?" He made a confused gesture to his ears, as if he'd been listening to something on his ear antennas, though of course he hadn't. But at least that explained why he'd just blinked silently at her like a complete moron. Avery repeated her request, and Watt passed her the bag, hiding a smile. "Thanks, Nadia. Ye of little faith." "What are you listening to?" Avery asked politely, passing back the bag, but he could tell her mind was elsewhere. "This guy named Jake Saunders. I doubt you know him." "No way! You like country?" Avery exclaimed. Watt nodded, though he'd never heard a country song before in his life. "What do you think of Jake's new album?" Avery went on, eagerly. "I like it," Watt said carefully, reading almost word for word the commentary Avery had sent to Atlas a few weeks ago. "But it's not as good as his early stuff. My favorite song of his has always been Crash and Burn." "Me too," Avery gushed, then surprised him by singing the chorus under her breath. "I'm not coming over. You and I are long done. You can crash and burn." Her singing voice was low, with a seductive huskiness that Watt hadn't expected. "With another one," he managed, singing the last few words along with her, and she laughed. "So what brings you here?" she asked after a moment. She was mesmerizing. Her eyes, her laugh, that unexpected song. "I'm meeting some friends to play Wizards," he said. "Oh, that used to be my favorite. You know the part where you get to the sword in the stone and you have to pull it out?" Watt opened his mouth to lie. Nadia had pulled up the Arena's map for him, along with a description of that scene, from a game enthusiast's website, but for some reason he didn't want to. "Actually, I've never been here before," he admitted. "Really?" Avery sounded surprised by that. "Well, I won't ruin it for you. But piece of advice, when the alchemist offers you the potions, take the smallest goblet."
"Will that one help you win?"
"Oh no, they all get you to the next level. That one just tastes better than the others," Avery said seriously, and Watt smiled. "I'm Avery, by the way.
she added, belatedly.
Avery, he repeated, as if he hadn't been on her feeds this whole time. I'm Watt.
She looked back at the door, and he realized he might be about to lose her.
What game were you playing in there?
He asked, with a nod at the pistols holstered to her waist.
Aliens. Avery shrugged. I needed some air, I guess.
Watt nodded, following Nadia's advice, even though he felt like he should speak. But Nadia was watching Avery's breathing and pulse, and seemed to think there was something else she wanted to say, if given the chance.
It's all just so exhausting sometimes, you know?
Avery looked away, fiddling with her haptic glove. Watt hesitated. Nadia? He asked. He wasn't accustomed to being confused by girls, especially ones this gorgeous. In his experience, beauty and complexity were often inversely correlated.
What do you mean?
Do you ever feel like people think they know you, but they can't, because they don't know the most important thing about you?
Actually, yeah.
No one knew about Nadia, yet she was so deeply, inextricably intertwined in everything Watt thought and knew and did. He wondered what big secret Avery felt like she was hiding. Whatever it was, it couldn't be as bad as having a quant in your brain.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that.
Avery had reverted to her formal, more distant tone, the one she'd used when she first asked Watt for an M&M. He looked up sharply and saw that she was reaching up to pull her hair back, letting him briefly catch the scent of her lavender shampoo. She was shutting herself away, hiding away the vulnerable side she'd given him a brief glimpse of. Watt thought frantically of ways to stop her. She couldn't leave, not yet.
Avery, Watt said, just as her wristband beeped, indicating that she'd been out for too much time already.
If she stayed in the staging room much longer, the arena wouldn't let her back in.
Looks like I should get back in there.
She gave him a smile, but it lacked the warmth he'd seen just a minute ago.
Before you leave, can we exchange flick links?
He stood up as he said it, feeling awkward. He hadn't been this nervous around a girl since before Nadia.
Oh, sure.
Avery waited as their contacts connected, enabling them to flicker and ping each other.
See you around,
she added, and pulled her headset on. The doors slid open, giving Watt a glimpse of the arena as it truly was, a series of gray walls covered in misters and motion sensors.
Good luck in there,
he called out, but Avery was already a world away.
Eris.
You're here! Avery exclaimed, moving down the hallway toward Eris. The crowds instinctively parted to let her pass. I thought maybe you were skipping. I haven't seen you in ages.
Avery's voice pitched upward at the end, turning that last sentence into a question.
Even I wouldn't skip the first day, Eris said lightly, though it had been the absolute worst first day of school ever. She'd actually come up tower early, wearing a plain black windbreaker over her uniform to hide from the lower floor stairs, and showered in the school locker room. Anything to avoid getting ready in that cramped bathroom she shared with her mom. Normally, on the first day of school, Eris's parents made her take an awkwardly posed picture by the front door to add to the collection they'd started way back when she was in preschool.
Good luck, they would both exclaim, hugging her until she finally escaped to the lift, laughing at their silly picture tradition, but secretly loving it. There hadn't been any pics this morning, of course. Eris wondered if her dad even knew it was the first day of school. At that thought, she felt a sudden, sharp pain gathering behind her eyes. She closed them for a moment, trying to calm the storm of hurt and bewilderment that tore through her. She couldn't let Avery see.
Okay, but, Eris, is something going on?
Avery asked as the two started toward the exit. The afternoon bell had just rung. Students clustered in the hallways like flocks of monochromatic birds, all of them wearing pleated skirts or pressed khakis and button-down shirts. For the first time in her life, Eris was grateful for their stupid school uniform. She wasn't sure how many outfit combinations she could make with the clothes she'd brought down to 103,